The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Investopedia, Kiplinger Personal Finance, and also continuing our readings from the book Money Hacks by Lisa Rowan. Our first article from Investopedia, this is an interesting article giving definitions of various financial terms. The title is Financial Terms You Need to Know. Learn the language essential to building your portfolio and financial success. The first term is 401k. A 401k is a retirement plan with a tax advantage offered by many American employers. Employees agree to have a percentage of each paycheck paid directly into an investment account, and sometimes the employer matches part of that contribution. A 403b. A 403b is a retirement plan that closely resembles a 401k, but is offered to employees of public schools and other tax-exempt organizations. The investment choices can be more limited. A 529 plan. A 529 plan is a tax advantage savings plan designed to help pay for education. The two main types of 529 plans are education savings plans and prepaid tuition plans. Education savings plans grow tax-deferred, and withdrawals are tax-free when used for qualified education expenses. Prepaid tuition plans also allow the account owner to pay current tuition rates for future attendance at designated colleges and universities. Alternative investment. An alternative investment is a financial asset that does not fall into one of the conventional investment categories of equity, income, and cash. Alternative investment vehicles can include private equity or venture capital, hedge funds, managed futures, art and antiques, commodities, and derivative contracts. Real estate is also often classified as an alternative investment. Annual percentage rate, or APR. Annual percentage rate is a percentage that represents the actual yearly cost of funds over the term of a loan or income earned on an investment. It includes any fees or additional costs associated with the transaction, but it does not take compounding into account. The APR also gives consumers a bottom-line number they can compare across lenders, credit cards, or investment products. Balance transfer. Balance transfer is a strategy to help you pay down debt that moves outstanding debt from one credit card to another, typically a new one. This maneuver can help you avoid paying interest during a promotional period, but it can also involve transfer fees and other costs. Bonds. Bonds are a fixed income instrument that represents a loan made by an investor to a borrower, typically a corporation or government. Bond details include the end date when the principal of the loan is due to be paid to the bond owner. Certificate of deposit, or CD. Certificate of deposit is a savings product that earns interest on a lump sum for a fixed period of time. Unlike a savings account, the money must remain untouched for the entirety of the term or risk penalty fees or lost interest. Compound interest. Compound interest is the interest on a loan or deposit calculated based on both the initial principal and the accumulated interest from previous periods. Compounding multiplies money at an accelerated rate over simple interest. Credit score. A credit score is a number from 300 to 850 that rates a consumer's credit worthiness based on number of open accounts, total levels of debt, repayment history, and other factors. Lenders use credit scores to evaluate the probability that an individual will repay loans in a timely manner. The higher the score, the better a borrower looks to a potential lender. Debt avalanche. Debt avalanche is a method of strategically paying down debt quickly by making the minimum payment on debts with lower interest rates and using your remaining cash to pay off more than the minimum on the debts with higher interest rates. Debt consolidation. Debt consolidation is combining multiple loans with worse payment terms into a single, larger loan with better payment terms, thereby lowering your amount owed in interest. Options can include a lower interest credit card or a home equity loan. Debt settlement, an agreement between a lender and a borrower in which the borrower repays a portion of a loan balance and the remainder of the debt is forgiven. This can require a significant amount of cash and can negatively impact your credit score. Debt snowball. Debt snowball is defined as a method of debt repayment in which a person lists all of their debts from the smallest to the largest, not including a mortgage, and pays the minimum amount to each using remaining funds to pay extra towards the smallest debt. Debt-to-income ratio. Debt-to-income ratio is a financial ratio comparing a borrower's total monthly debt payments to their total monthly income. It's commonly used to assess a borrower's credit worthiness. Diversification. Diversification is a risk management strategy that mixes a variety of investments across various financial instruments, industries, and other categories. It aims to minimize losses by investing in areas that would react differently to the same event. Emergency fund. An emergency fund is money stashed away that people can use in times of financial distress. Most experts recommend having at least 3 to 6 months of living expenses saved in liquid form that you could gain quick access to if and when you need it. Exchange-traded fund, or ETF. ETF is a pooled investment security that holds multiple underlying assets and trades on an exchange like a stock. It can be structured to track anything from the price of an individual commodity to a large, diverse collection of securities. Fiduciary. Fiduciary is a person or organization that acts on behalf of another person or persons, putting their client's interest ahead of their own with a duty to preserve good faith and trust. Being a fiduciary thus requires being bound both legally and ethically to act in the other's best interest. Fiduciary tasks often require managing the assets of a person or group of people. Financial advisor. A financial advisor is a person who provides financial advice or guidance to customers for compensation. Financial advisors can provide many services such as investment management, tax planning, and estate planning. A wide variety of licenses and certifications may be required depending on the services provided by a financial advisor. High-yield savings account. A high-yield savings account is a type of savings account that typically pays 20 to 25 times the national average of a standard savings account. You may be able to open a high-yield savings account where you already bank, but it's worth noting that the highest rates are often available from online-only banks. Index fund. An index fund is a type of mutual fund or exchange-traded fund, ETF, with a portfolio constructed to match or track the components of a financial market index, such as the S&P 500. These offer broad market exposure, low operating expenses, and low portfolio turnover. Inflation. Inflation is the rate at which prices for goods and services rise, which can be translated as the decline of purchasing power over time. Those with tangible assets like property or stocked commodities may like to see some inflation, as that raises the value of their assets. Inflation can be contrasted with deflation, which occurs when prices decline and purchasing power increases. Money market. Money market is defined as overnight swaps of large amounts of money between banks and the U.S. government. Most money market transactions are wholesale between financial institutions and companies, but retail investors can buy money market mutual funds or open money market accounts through their bank. Risk tolerance. Risk tolerance is a measure of the degree of loss an investor is willing to endure with their portfolio. Stock volatility, market swings, economic or political events, and regulatory or interest rate changes affect an investor's tolerance for risk. Roth IRA. A Roth IRA is a type of tax-advantaged individual retirement account, or IRA, to which you can contribute after-tax dollars. The primary benefit of a Roth IRA is that the contributions you make and the earnings on those contributions can grow tax-free and be withdrawn tax-free after age 59 and a half, as long as the account has been open for at least 5 years. Stocks. Stocks are also known as equity. A stock is a security that represents the ownership of a fraction of the issuing corporation. Units of stock are called shares, and they entitle the owner to a proportion of the corporation's assets and profits equal to how much stock they own. Stocks are bought and sold predominantly on stock exchanges. There are two main types of stocks, common and preferred. Time horizon. Time horizon is the period of time one expects to hold an investment until they need the money back. Time horizons are largely dictated by investment goals and strategies. For example, saving for a down payment on a house for perhaps 2 years would be considered a short-term time horizon, while investing for retirement would be a long-term time horizon. The longer the time horizon, the longer the power of compounding has to work. Generally speaking, the longer the time horizon, the more aggressive an investor can be in their portfolio, and vice versa. And lastly, qualified charitable distribution, or QCD. A QCD is a tax-free donation from your individual retirement account, or IRA, to a qualified charity. You must be age 70 and a half or older to make a qualified charitable distribution, and if certain conditions are met, QCDs also can count towards their required minimum distributions, also known as RMDs, that people age 73 or older must meet each year if they have a traditional IRA. Our next article is from Kiplinger Personal Finance. Is it a good time to cash in your I-bonds? As inflation eases, investors are redeeming their I-bonds and putting the money elsewhere. In 2022, a spike in inflation made normally straight series I savings bonds almost as popular as tickets to Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. I-bonds issued between May and October 2022 earned a six-month composite rate of 9.62%, creating a surge in demand from yield-hungry investors that briefly overwhelmed the Treasury's direct website. I-bond rates have since come down to earth. Bonds issued between May and October of 2023 pay a composite rate of 4.3%. Meanwhile, some certificates of deposit and high-yield savings accounts are paying more than 5%. Treasury bills topped 5.3%. Yields on Treasury inflation protected securities, or TIPS, that's T-I-P-S, government securities that are indexed to the rate of inflation, are also attractive now, says Dave Inna, founder of TIPSWatch.com, a website that focuses on I-bonds and TIPS. But I-bonds may still provide some benefits for long-term investors, particularly those issued between May and October of 2023. And cashing in your I-bonds may mean giving up some interest if you can cash them in at all. I-bonds consist of two components, an inflation rate, which is based on the consumer price index and is adjusted every 6 months from the bond's issue date, and a fixed date that remains the same for the life of the bond, up to 30 years. You can't redeem an I-bond in the first year, and if you cash it in before 5 years have passed, you'll forfeit the most recent 3 months of interest. If you check your bond's value at treasurydirect.gov within the first 5 years of owning it, the amount you'll see will have the three-month penalty subtracted from it. Weighing the options. With that penalty in mind, if you've owned an I-bond for longer than a year, but less than 5 years, is it worth redeeming the bond, which means giving up some of the interest you've earned, so you can reinvest the money in a higher-yielding investment? The answer depends on your goals, when you bought the bond, and the fixed rate for the bond, says Ina. For example, if you bought one in October of 2022, when many investors snapped up I-bonds to capture the 9.62% rate for 6 months before the rate reset, your optimal redemption date is January the 1st of 2024, Ina says. The reason, those bonds earn a 0% fixed rate and transitioned in October of 2023 to a composite rate of 3.38%, which is well below what you can get from short-term treasuries. If you wait to cash in the bonds until 3 months after the rate resets, the interest penalty will apply entirely to the 3.38% rate, rather than to some portion of the penalty applying to the higher 6.48% rate that the bond earned during the previous 6 months. For I-bonds purchased in September of 2022, the optimal redemption date is December 1 of 23. For bonds purchased in August of 22, the optimal redemption rate date is November 1 of 2023. For I-bonds purchased in November of 2022 through April of 23, which can't be redeemed until at least November of 2023, your optimal redemption date will, to some extent, depend on the inflation-adjusted rate announced on November the 1st. Based on the Consumer Price Index through the first 8 months of 2023, Ina predicts that the bond's inflation rate will range from 3.2% to 3.4%. But those I-bonds have a 0.4% fixed rate, so you will want to hold on to them, Ina says. Likewise, you may want to hold on to I-bonds issued between May and October of 2023, even if the new 6 months inflation-adjusted rate is underwhelming. Those I-bonds have a fixed rate of 0.9%, which is the highest fixed rate in 16 years. No matter what happens to inflation in the future, you'll lock in that rate for as long as you own the bonds. My rule of thumb is, if you have a very attractive fixed rate, hold on to it as long as possible, Ina says. Our next article from Kiplinger Personal Finance, Why You Need a Power of Attorney. A time may come when you can't make health and financial decisions on your own. It's not pleasant to think about, but someday you may be unable to make decisions for yourself. Designating a power of attorney will protect your interest. A durable power of attorney gives someone you designate, known as your agent, the authority to make decisions if you become incapacitated. An agent who has durable power for health care, sometimes known as a health care proxy, can make decisions about your medical and end-of-life treatment. An individual who has durable power of attorney for finances has the authority to handle your financial matters, such as paying bills and managing your property. You can give the same individual both medical and financial power of attorney, or name separate agents based on their expertise. Selecting a power of attorney should be part of your estate plan, says Ashwani Praghakar, a trust and estate lawyer with David Hoff, Hutcher, and Critron. While many people assign power of attorney to an adult child or other family member, it's not necessary to pick a relative, and it's not always wise. You can, for example, choose your financial advisor to manage your investment decisions if you don't think a family member would be able to handle that responsibility. Put it in writing. Once you've selected your agent or agents, you can have an estate attorney draft a form identifying the kind of power of attorney that individual will have. Legal fees vary, but the average cost of having an attorney draw up a power of attorney paperwork ranges from $200 to $300. You can also find power of attorney forms on do-it-yourself websites, such as LegalZoom, that's LegalZoom.com, Nolo, that's N-O-L-O.com, and Rocket Lawyer, RocketLawyer.com. You'll find about $40. You'll pay about $40 to create the forms online. Regardless of how you draw up the power of attorney document, you should have it notarized to make the arrangement official. Some states require this. Estate attorneys can act as notaries if they're commissioned by the state where they're practicing law. It's recommended that you also arrange to have a witness when you and your agent sign the form. Some banks and brokerage firms use their own power of attorney form, so they may not honor a power of attorney unless certain conditions are met. Make sure you and your agent complete the paperwork required by your financial institutions and ask them to keep a copy on file. Changing your mind. Selecting a trustworthy agent is critical because an individual with power of attorney has broad authority over your finances and health care. In April of 2023, Terry Lynn Culver was sentenced to 3 years in prison after he was convicted of stealing more than $426,000 from a 92-year-old Wisconsin woman as he was acting as her agent using a power of attorney. He wrote checks from the woman to himself without her knowledge, took possession of her home, and sold multiple real estate properties she owned. If you suspect an individual who has your power of attorney may make decisions that aren't in your best interest, you can revoke the agent's authority as long as you're mentally competent. It's a good idea to include a provision in your power of attorney document that states you reserve the right to change the agent at any time. To avoid legal challenges, you should document any changes on a power of attorney revocation form. Go through the same process you went through initially, such as having the document notarized, and inform the previous power of attorney agent of the change. Our next article, also from Kiplinger Personal Finance, keep your credit cards active. At first blush, letting your credit cards sit idle may seem harmless. And if you're digging out of debt or struggling to keep your spending in check, minimizing credit card usage may be the best choice for your overall financial health. Otherwise, consider putting any credit cards that you haven't used in a while into the rotation for making purchases. The reason? If your credit card is inactive for a long period, anywhere from about 6 months to 3 years, says Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst at Bankrate, the card issuer may close it or reduce your credit limit. That could hurt your credit score. An important credit score factor is your credit utilization ratio. It's calculated by dividing your credit card balances by your credit card limits. Both on individual cards and in the aggregate across all of your accounts, and reflected as a percentage. Generally, the lower your utilization ratio, the better for your score, and you should try to keep utilization to no more than 30%. If the available credit on one of your cards is reduced or disappears, the utilization ratio calculated across all of your accounts could increase if you have balances on your other credit cards. If your card issuer reduces your credit limit, Rossman suggests asking the issuer to restore it to the previous limit. Making a small purchase with your credit card, even just once every few months, can help keep the account active. That may be a good strategy for the card that you'd rather not use that often, say because it offers rewards that are inferior to your other cards provide. Or set it on autopilot using the card for recurring automatic purchases, such as bills or subscription services. And as we wrap up our episode today, we will try to squeeze in here one or two hacks from the book Money Hacks. Money hack number 43. Avoid temptation by enjoying convenience. Do you find yourself tossing snacks into your shopping cart right and left, even when you're carefully planned your grocery list and meal plan? Avoid the temptation by skipping the trip altogether and getting your groceries delivered to your door. All you have to do is select your items online, provide your payment information, choose the delivery window, and wait for your ingredients to arrive. It's true that most of these services are not free. Whether you choose Amazon Fresh, Instacart, Peapod, or any other grocery delivery option, you'll probably pay between $7 and $12 per order. If you sign up for an annual membership, you might end up paying a little less per delivery. But the true benefit here is the money you'll save by skipping the distracting add-ons at the store. You'll also save money or gas or other transportation, as well as the time you would have spent pacing the aisles. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to listen to us again next time. On behalf of the North Carolina Reading Service, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.